All right, so today we're wrapping up our series, right? What if self-help isn't the best help? The series you thought was never going to end is about to end. All right, so our goal in this series, remember, is a pretty simple concept, right? That I think most of us want, you know, a life with a sense of meaning, a sense of purpose. And so often we can think the way we get those things is by focusing on ourselves. But what we really know is that the way that happens, the way we find meaning, peace, and purpose in our lives is by helping other folks find that. And throughout this series, we've kind of traveled along a bit of a journey in the sense that in the beginning, we kind of talked about those issues in general, right? The importance of being involved in something that's meaningful to you, stepping out and doing something that stretches you, whatever it may be. And we should all be involved in something that's important to us and that stretches us. But then last week, we kind of turned the corner a little bit, and we stopped talking about it in general, and we started talking a bit more about it specific to the church, our church. And so this week, as we finish up, I kind of want to bring all that together, again, focus on what does it mean for our church? And as we go through this, what I'll kind of wrap up with are the things that I think are the places where we really focus as we go forward from here. Now, remember that in this series, we're looking at the events of the life of a guy named Nehemiah. Now, you've heard me explain his background in tremendous detail at this point, but just to summarize, he lived about 2,500 years ago. The city that his family was from, Jerusalem, was destroyed, and he wanted to help those people, but he was not really in a position to help them. He lived 1,000 miles away. He didn't really have control over his own life. Yet somehow, he got the ability to get to the city. He got the resources to do the work. And as we saw last week, he actually got the work done. That his goal initially is to repair the perimeter of the city, to make the city secure and safe again. But as we've talked about throughout the series, that perimeter was never really the end goal, right? It was always about the people, helping the people to have a better life. And of course, security and safety are essential to having a good life. So he wanted to make sure that he got to that point. But now, after last week, the work is done. In fact, it was done pretty quickly. So the question arises that, well, now that that work is done, where do we go from here? What's left to talk about? What story is left to tell? Well, it turns out if you read the book of Nehemiah, where we're wrapping up is only about halfway through the entire book of Nehemiah. So there's a lot that still goes on. But the thing that I want us to see is that when he looked at the work that he had done in putting the perimeter in place, he had always only looked at that as a foundation. That was the first thing that needed to happen in order to do the work in people's lives that he really set out to do. And I think that's kind of where we are at this point. Because what's the foundation for us? Now, of course, Jesus is our foundation as a church. Jesus is, of course, our overall foundation. But what is our earthly foundation? It's you folks. Right? You guys have given us a strong foundation. You have been with this church for years. In some cases, you've been here for decades caring for this church. You've given us and cared for a beautiful building located in a really good part of the city. So you guys and all these things that you've cared for and the things that you've brought together, as God has also brought the city together around us, that's our foundation. So the same question exists for us. With our foundation, a strong foundation, where do we go from here? And I think we find some real insight in that by, again, looking at Nehemiah. Once Nehemiah had the foundation in place, where did he go from there? Because if there's any question whether Nehemiah considers finishing the perimeter the end of the work or just the beginning, we'll look at one thing that he describes to us just after the work has finished, just after the work on the perimeter has finished. Nehemiah says to us, at the time, the city was large and spacious, but the population was small, and none of the houses had been rebuilt. In other words, the foundation was in place, and there was lots of room, but there was room to fill. There were people here, but there was still work to do. And since Nehemiah's journal actually goes on well into the future, we know that eventually he does get the city filled. In fact, eventually the city gets so full, they actually have to use like a lottery system to control who can move into the city and who can't. So that focus on people seems to pay off somehow. And I think the same sort of future exists for us, that we can get there. There's a line from the book of Zechariah, which is a huge motivator for me. The language is kind of funny, but if you look at what it's actually being said, do not despise small beginnings. The Lord takes joy to see the work begin. The Lord takes joy to see the work begin. That we can be so tempted to look around when things aren't quite where we'd like them to be, that say, well, what can we do here? What's possible? And Jesus says, I'm happy to see you start. Because in order to get anywhere, we have to start. We have to look with the eyes that God has, in the sense that we look around, not what just is in front of us, but what can be. And so that's the eyes I think that we need to have. And as we kind of look to the future, that's where our thoughts have to be. We do the work that's in front of us, but we always have to think about where we're going. And what are the things that drive us about where we're going? And what are the kind of the parameters, or, you know, to use a business term, what are the pillars that we use to go forward? And then keep our eyes on those things. Because I do believe we have a strong future in front of us. I do believe we have an opportunity for growth. And it won't happen right away. I repeat this a lot because I don't want anyone to get discouraged. It will take time. It will take a long time. It will take longer than any of us wanted to, most of all me, right? I like to move fast, but things take time, and it's worth it. And it's worth it to always care for people along the way, to care for the people who are here, and as we reach out further and further, to care for more and more people. But one of the things that we have to do, that as we go forward, we have to agree on what's important. And this, is a point that Nehemiah makes, because Nehemiah calls the people together. And when he calls the people together, as they start to plan for the future, look how he describes it. All the people assembled with a unified purpose at the square just inside the water gate. Now, Watergate's kind of a funny name to us, post-1970s sort of thing. All right, but it's just a location inside the city. He's just saying, hey, we met over there, sort of thing. But what's the operative statement there? Assembled with a unified purpose. Do we all have to believe the same things are important? All right, so as we go through this message today, I'm going to describe the things that I think are important. You don't have to agree with me, but we have to kind of understand each other if that's the case, because I'd like to talk with you. As I describe things towards the end of this message, please understand that I want to hear what you have to say. I do not claim to be right. But I do believe there's a clear vision forward. And so it's important that we are unified in purpose, that we do understand each other, that if there's a disagreement about why something's important, let's talk to each other and understand how we unify on those things. Because we need to be unified in purpose. And Nehemiah points out how important that is as we go forward. And as Nehemiah has pulled the people together, we're kind of seeing a little bit about what we talked about last week. Because remember that when Nehemiah was starting to finish up the work and bring the people together, he focused on a few things we talked about last week. First of all, he focused on community, that we are all one community, and the people in the city were all one community. He made sure the people felt valuable, that they knew they were an important part of something important. And he made sure people were valued, that they were loved and cared for without regard for what they could do. Those who were more capable were not more loved than those who had challenges, right? That all those things came together. And one of the things that we want to keep in mind is as important as all of those things are, and they are important, we also are called to serve as Jesus calls us to serve. So meeting people's kind of physical, emotional, and social needs are important. But there's something else that's important that we never want to lose sight of. So Nehemiah tells us that on October 8th, Ezra the priest brought the book of the law before the assembly. He reminds us that a core part of our mission is helping people to find Jesus. Now, as I say that out loud, that may seem funny, but something that's kind of happened over time is sometimes religious organizations, churches, and other ones tend to fall down on one side of things or the other. Some religious organizations focus just on kind of emotional needs, material needs, physical needs. Other religious organizations don't really pay attention to those things, and they focus only on the spiritual needs, the relationship with God. And it's common to be focused on one, not opposed to the other, but just more focused on one. But that's not what Jesus describes for us. Jesus describes for us that we are to be both, that we are a both and people, that we care dearly about people's physical needs, emotional needs, things like community. But we also care dearly about people's eternity and relationship with God. And so we have to keep both of those things in front of us all the time. And we have to make sure that they are always priorities in the things that we do. And the thing that was happening in the city at this point where Nehemiah is that there was a core group of people who had actually maintained a relationship with God. But many of the people in the city had either fallen away from their relationship with God or possibly never even really had one. So what Nehemiah does is organize the people who have that relationship to begin sharing that with people, helping the people to redevelop those things. And so again, what we see here is this really important point that we need to be a both and people, not an either or people. That we care about people's lives in this life and we care about people's lives in eternity. And we always have to be doing both of those. And it's not always easy to do that. It's very easy for one of those to start to outweigh the other. But if you look at the life of Jesus, if you read through the Gospels, Jesus is doing both. He heals people, their physical needs. But he also speaks truth to them about their relationship with God. He does both. We have four Gospels. What's interesting is that the first three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, focus very much on the follow, follow, do, do, do. But John dials in on the eternity part. So we want people who do and do a lot in the world that we're placed in. But we always want to drive it home with keeping people connected to God and helping people grow in a relationship with Jesus. Now, as Nehemiah pulls this assembly together, I want us to take a close look at exactly how the assembly is constructed. He says, we have the assembly, which included men and women and all the children old enough to understand. Now, this is a really important point, right? Remember, this is the ancient world, right? 2,500 years ago. We might be tempted to think in the ancient world, maybe only the men were allowed to come. But that wasn't true. Then we might think, sure, the women can come, but only adults can come. But notice Nehemiah invites the children as well. Then Nehemiah makes certain to include the children. Why is it important to include children? They're our future. Children are essential. If we don't have children, we don't have a future. If we don't have children, we don't carry the mission on beyond our own lifetimes. And so Nehemiah makes sure that children are included. And the thing is that I don't think anyone would ever doubt that having children around is an important thing. But the question is it enough for having children around to be important? I mean, of course they're important. But is that enough? I mean, think about, if you can think way back to like I was in Sunday school like in the 1970s, right? And I had great Sunday school teachers. And they were actually really good men who spoke into my life. But I don't know that kids were a priority. Right? Kids were important, right? That they, you know, but the church did what it was going to do, and, you know, the Sunday school kind of went off and did something. But everything that was done was organized around the adults first, and the kids kind of got bolted on a little bit, right? Again, great people were in my life, but they were always kind of working around the larger activities of the church. So we were important, but is important enough? How does Jesus feel about kids? If you've ever been in church for any length of time, there's a narrative I'm going to go through very quickly that gives us some real insight on how Jesus feels about children. So now we're going to go kind of forward in time about 500 years from Nehemiah to the time of Jesus. And Jesus one day is sitting down, and Matthew tells us this. One day some parents brought their children to Jesus so he could lay his hands on them and pray for them. Now it's important to understand that this would have been a very normal thing. You know, we know Jesus as the Son of God, as the Messiah. People at that time knew him largely as a rabbi, right? A teacher of God. And it was very common to bring children to a rabbi to have him pray for them, to lay hands on them, to bless them, sort of thing. So what the parents are about to do is very normal. But as the parents walk up with their children, but the disciples scolded the parents for bothering him. Why would they do that? Do they not like kids? To get away from me, kid, you bother me, sort of thing? I don't think that's the case. We know in first century Jewish culture, children were considered valuable. But children had a place. Right? A child's place was to listen, to be respectful, to learn. They were important, but they weren't the priority. That, yes, the kids were important as long as it didn't get in the way of the priorities that others had, that the adults had. Because remember that we kind of look at these narratives and we say, oh, this is a moment in time, this is a moment in time. But for the people that were following Jesus, his apostles and his disciples, it was kind of, you know, you're with him all the time and he's stopping and talking to these people and we're trying to get somewhere and now there's another delay. They wanted to move fast. And he didn't. And so it wasn't that the disciples disliked the children or even that they thought the children weren't important. But they weren't the priority. The adults had priorities. And as long as what the children needed didn't interfere with the adults' priorities, that was fine. But if there were other priorities for the adults, yeah, the children were important, but we have priorities. Where does Jesus fall on that issue? Where does Jesus place children in all this? Well, if you know this narrative, you know where he stands. But Jesus said, "Let the children come to me. Don't stop them." What's Jesus saying? Check your priorities. Right? He's kind of, you know, whoa, back up. Don't do anything that interferes with a child coming to know Jesus. And the thing that we want to remember is that in this case, in this narrative, the disciples were explicitly trying to stop the children from coming to Jesus. But there are lots of ways to stop a child from coming to know Jesus. Not having things for them. Not giving them a way to connect. Not giving them a place to connect. Now, in the church today, that's a challenging thing to get started. But I think it should be a priority. A thing to figure out, a thing to work out as we go along, although again, it is challenging. But what Jesus is saying is that what the adults need to be willing to do here is they needed to adjust what they thought was most important, what was the priority. Jesus understood that the disciples were anxious to get where they were going. He understood that the disciples wanted to, you know, do the things they were setting out to do. And Jesus says, well, I want you to take some time first. And let's reach these children. Let's not worry about where we're going. Let's reach the ones that are here. Because that's the future. That's where we head to. And so what Jesus was basically saying is that y'all need to be a little bit willing to be inconvenienced for a moment so we can reach these children. We need to be willing to be delayed so we can reach these children. And then as Jesus says that, he goes one step further. He says, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to those who are like these children. So what is he saying there? He's saying that not only are the children important, not only is reaching them and does reaching them need to be a priority, but he's saying that, you know what? You guys could learn something from the children. That when it comes to your relationship with your Heavenly Father, it's better to be like a child. Because how does a child behave, right? They are open-minded, willing to learn, willing to be stretched, willing to try things, willing to step out. The children see joy in small things. I mean, one of my greatest joys, honestly, in being married to Bonnie is I'm a guy who's always trying to rush past to the next thing. Let's get to the next thing. Let's get to the next thing. And she's like, wait a minute, there's something really cool right here. Why don't we stop and look at that for a minute? You know, so much of the joy I have in going to Disney World is like I married a child. It actually makes Disney World fun for me. Because I'm always moving to the next thing. This line's too long. Let's go to another one sort of thing. And Jesus is saying that in our relationship with him, that joy, childlike joy, needs to be part of who we are. Openness, stretching ourselves, trying things, stepping out even when you're not sure you can do it, being energized by those challenges. That's what Jesus says we should do. And I think that when we embrace that within the church, we embrace that childlike attitude, and we embrace this idea of trying to bring children in, it energizes the whole church. You know, a couple weeks ago when we had a baby laughing, look, you guys are awesome, but a laughing baby kind of tops everything. You know, it's just a joy to have that, to energize it. And so I think we want to really kind of try to grab onto that somehow. And I don't think anyone disagrees with me. I'm not like lecturing you on, you know, children are important. That's not what I'm doing. But the other thing is that when we don't prioritize children, it has a ripple effect. Think of the disciples there with Jesus and these parents who may have not really known much about Jesus. They start to bring their children to Jesus, and someone says, oh, hold on, we got things to do. That didn't just affect the children. How interested would those parents be in anything those disciples had to say after that? Right? It's a connection that we have, that we are naturally drawn, you know, to be inclusive of children, but we kind of have to remember sometimes. So this is something that Jesus wanted to make incredibly clear, that children are to be a centerpiece in what we do. They are to be a priority. And it seemed that Nehemiah, even though Nehemiah lived 500 years before Jesus, Nehemiah seemed to understand that because he intentionally included children in what they were doing because he knew this city was to live on long past their lifetimes. So he wanted to be sure that it would carry on and people would be there to do it. And then Nehemiah also shows us another key part, that even though he's talking about a city 2,500 years ago, he shows us something else that I think is a central part of how we go forward as a church and how we engage with this world around us. So Nehemiah carries on, he says, the faith leaders read from the book of the law of God. Now, we don't know for certain, but what we think they're talking about there is what we know as the first five books of the Old Testament. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, because that would have been the foundation of their relationship with God. So basically, what has happened is that the people of this city have gotten so disconnected from God that they don't really kind of know what to do or what they're supposed to do or even how to have a relationship with God. So Nehemiah pulls them together, and they actually has the faith leaders kind of start explaining things. In fact, it goes on and says, and they clearly explained the meaning of what was being read, helping the people to understand each passage. So it's kind of funny for us to say, well, helping them understand, like, what's going on? And one of the things we have to be careful about is that, you know, Nehemiah lived in the ancient world. And it's very easy, I'll speak for myself, it's very easy for me to lump the entire ancient world together. Yeah, there's Moses, there's Nehemiah, there's Joshua, they're all mixed in. Right? But they lived long apart, right? Nehemiah lived well, centuries after Moses. And the book of the law was an ancient book written in a language that these people didn't understand, in a time frame that was very different than their own. Just like the Bible is for people today. It's an ancient book. The newest parts are 2,000 years old. Much of it is older than that. And the thing we have to remember that if you grew up in church, there are a lot of things that are very normal to you when you read them that are very foreign to people who've never heard those things. And so often as we read from the Bible, we have to kind of take the context and the time frame that it's written in and figure out how to apply it in this time frame. And that's what Nehemiah had the religious leaders doing, is take that ancient book and bring it into their time frame. Well, in the same way, that's our responsibility. You know, a big part of that's my responsibility, right, is to actually, the term we use is practical teaching. How do you take this book that's 2,000 years old and take it for its spiritual value, but also how do you live a better life by following this? You know, as I've heard people say, you know, following Jesus will give you a better life and it'll make you better at life, sort of thing. But we need to be able to help people find that, because on the surface, if people are not exposed to that and they don't have that background, it doesn't reach them as readily the same way. And again, that approach enriches us all. That even though many of these are passages we have heard for years, you know, some of the most common passages at this point in our lives, we may have heard hundreds of times. But there are still new insights in there, right? It's kind of the idea of a living word, where somehow God reveals new things to us. And sometimes when we look at it in a different light, we find new things. And those things then lift up and enrich the whole church. So as I finish up this morning, as we finish up this series, the thing I want us to see is that a narrative written more than 2,000 years ago about a guy who lived 2,500 years ago actually has insights for all of us. And I think it specifically has insights for us as a church on how we go forward. And so as we look back on these kind of this week and the 4 weeks preceding this, as I read it, as I've prayed about it and meditated on it, I really feel like God is kind of giving us kind of these four, what I'll call pillars, four key things that I believe should be central to how we go forward, that the things that we do need to fit into these pillars. And I believe these are the things that will help us to be successful in reaching more people, in serving more people, in making a difference in more lives. Right, so the first one is that we need to build community. We talked a ton about this last week, right? But we need to be in this together. And I know many of you have been together for a long time. But as new people come in, we need to make sure that they feel part of our community, that they feel connected, that the new people care, and that they also have an opportunity to be part of a purpose greater than themselves, to be an important part of something important. Because the thing that Jesus has called us to do is really important. Right? His mission lives on in us. There's no greater mission out there. There's nothing more important than helping people to have a better life in this life and connecting them to eternity. So we want to be that kind of community. We want to be focused on community. And an extension of that, right, is that we want to serve people. We want to serve people inside the church and outside the church. We're caring for one another and caring for the people around us. You know, we have ministries like that, right? We have the pantry, right? We cooperate with the community soup kitchen, all those sort of things. Now, one thing I'll point out is that it might be really tempting to go, well, care team takes care of all that. The thing I want to kind of point out to us is that the care team sets our vision and directs us and leads us, but you know what they need? They need support. So when they point us where to go, we show up and we go and we help. You know, and I know many of you do that, but I want our kind of hearts and minds to be open that as they point us in new directions and as they point out things that we can do, that we're willing to step into it and do it. That they take the lead, but they shouldn't have to carry all the load. So we can all come together and help them with those things. The next thing is that we need to be inspiring people to find life in Christ. It seems obvious, but I will tell you, I've been to lots of churches that did not inspire me at all. It needs to be inspiring that people need to believe and understand that they find something in a relationship with Jesus that they don't find elsewhere. And that's a long process, and it's a slow process. And it actually builds very much on the other things that we do. But this needs to be a central part of what we do and who we are. And then the last one. Prioritize the needs of the next generation. Reaching the next generation is important, but we have to prioritize it. We have to figure out how to do it. We have to be willing to take chances to do it. So here's my question, though. Who's the next generation? That's a lot of people at this point, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, Bonnie and I are in our late 50s. I know many of you are a little bit older than me, right? So for us, for the next generation are people who are in their 40s, in their 30s, in their 20s, in their teens, down to children. And it needs to be a priority. This needs to be who we are. Because prioritizing the generations behind us makes a huge difference. It energizes us. You know, and when we focus on caring for children, it lifts up the parents, it enriches the parents. Even parents who don't come to church but bring their kids get something out of it because the kid's going to talk about it at home, right? So there's value there. As the opportunity presents itself, how can we lift up and support young adults? I don't know what 30 and 40 is. I used to call it middle age, but now that I'm in my 50s, it's not middle aged anymore. It's young, right? I used to think I was middle aged, but now I'm middle aged, right? Sort of thing. But we want to focus on those things, you know. And I know it's hard, and I know many of you have children who some go to church, some don't. You're trying to figure out how to get them connected. You know, it's a multi-pronged effort. You know, we try to make it fun where we can. We try to make it interesting and valuable as much as we can. Well, hopefully, always valuable. I try to make it always interesting. I do as well as I can on that sometimes. But it's something that we all do, right? That this is central to kind of who we are as we go forward. That I really believe that if we focus on these things, and as we make decisions about what we do, we say, where does it fit here? And if it doesn't fit here, we say, well, why don't we just put that aside for now, and we'll come back later, right? If we focus on that, and we make sure we're doing this, I believe it will carry us forward. Again, it will take a while. It will take longer than you want. It will take longer than I want. But it's one step at a time as we do it, doing what we can. And the thing I want us to remember is that we need to do things like this, but we also need to do to kind of surround it with the kind of the right attitudes and the right approach. Because if we think back at Nehemiah, and I'll finish up with this point. If we think back at Nehemiah, going all the way back to the beginning of the story, 4 weeks ago, he was in no position to do anything that made a difference. He literally was in what seemed like an impossible position. And do you remember what the first thing he did was? He prayed. He basically said, God, help me to be part of the solution. So he started out with prayer. The next thing he did is he focused on people. He never focused on that kind of one task of rebuilding the perimeter. In fact, he wasn't hyper-focused on any task. It was always about lifting up the people. He knew what his purpose was. He knew what his end goal was, what he was trying to achieve. And then finally, he was persistent. Things did not come together easily for him. Some hurdles he got over quickly. Other hurdles were persistent and difficult. But he stayed in it. But I think that's our way forward, is that focusing on these ideas and the things that we do, surrounding them with prayer, staying focused on people, right? Knowing what our purpose is, which is largely this, and being persistent even as things are challenging, that will enable us to go forward and see God do amazing things. Jesus promised that he would build his church. He says, I will build my church, and even the gates of Hades will not stop me. He enables us in that process, right? So what we're asking God to do, we're asking Jesus to do, is let us be part of building his church. That it's not our effort to do it. We have to do things and we have to work to be part of it. But we do it in sync with him. And he drives us forward to do it, and we get to be part of his amazing work. That's my hope for all of us. That's my prayer for all of us.